Hello, everybody, and welcome into the Patriots Recap Podcast. Alex Barth, Matt Dolliff, 98.5 Sports Hub. Patriots have won six straight games. Ho-hum, right? They take down the Titans 36-13. They're within striking distance of the top seed in the AFC. Just business as usual this time of year in New England, right, Matt?
I know. It's crazy. It's just back to dominating the league. No problem. It's crazy. Barth, real quick. Yep. I had a viral tweet last night. When I shared it, I'm going to pull it up right now. It was just a series of stats. I think it was on ESPN.
Was it that screen grab? I saw that. Yeah.
Yeah. I want to give credit to my friend Mike who texted me this. And then I said, I shall tweet that. and obviously it was successful. So yeah, Patriots since week seven, I assume this means that includes week seven. That's a question I have is when you say since a certain time, do you include time? But I assume this means since the Dallas game, since after that Dallas loss. So they are first in the NFL in points per game, opponent's points per game, offensive efficiency, defensive efficiency, and turnover margin. So I don't know what the efficiency stats are, honestly, but I don't know. That sounds good to me, right?
Well, I would say, you know, I'll throw those out because you don't win games with efficiency. You win them with points. First in points against. Nobody is scoring more points than the Patriots over the last 2 months, and nobody is allowing fewer points than the Patriots over the last 2 months. That's the game.
Good way to win football games. Score points and not allow them.
Right. That's the whole game right there. Hey, you know, I always, when people try to throw too much math, too much statistics at me, I always get them with this one because the math nerds hate this because they say, well, you know, nothing's definitive. The math shows you that nothing's definitive. Did you know, freak stat here, Matt, freak stat. Did you know that in NFL history, when one team scores more points than their opponent, they win 100% of the time? Can you believe that?
100% of the time, it works
100% of the time. If you score more points than your opponent, literally no team has ever, even the Falcons, even the Detroit Lions haven't found a way to lose in that situation. They haven't been in that situation a ton, but even they haven't found a way to lose in that.
Sorry to cut you off, but I used to run the scoreboard for a youth hockey league in North Andover, the team was up 6-0, and the coach ended up yelling too much at me and the referees over the rules or whatever, so that the team that was winning 6-0 had to forfeit the game. So it is possible to score more than the opponent and still lose.
So
that's the only way.
So I believe I specified NFL because I too have a really good forfeit story that's more or less the same thing. I was a youth umpire, but in the NFL, 100% of the time, you score more than your opponent, you win the game. The Patriots are scoring more points than their opponent, and they are preventing their opponent from scoring points better than any team in the National Football League. The difference is the greatest from any team in the National Football League. Now, some people will poke at the opponents, and I think for the most part, the opponents have been better than people give the Patriots credit for. Now, they're not facing the 86 Bears every week, but you know, I think the Chargers are a pretty good football team, a team that can realistically win their division. I think the Browns, despite what we saw on Sunday night, are a team that has some talent. The Titans are an interesting one to me because, and we talked about, you know, we talked about this going into the game that they have a lot of talent, but all that talent's on IR. Now, I still think they had some key players that played in the game that gave the Patriots fits. I also think this was of that stretch and maybe of the whole season, the toughest coaching matchup for Bill Belichick. Mike Vrabel was 2-0 against him, and he always comes with a good game plan. He did it again. So where do you – like, how do you feel coming out of this game? Should it have been the rock fight that it was? Do you view this game as a blowout or not? I feel like some people are back and forth on that.
We're debating the definition of a blowout. I know I brought that up on Twitter. I was like, we might be – you know, take away that one touchdown at the end of the first half, and we're talking about another blowout. Yeah, you went by 3 touchdowns. I don't know if that's a blowout. I think it's got to be four or more touchdowns to officially declare it a blowout. But no, that was their best win of the year, I thought, because of the coaching matchup and because
best win
you
of the year.
Saw it. Yeah, I think so. But because it was they were the number one seed, and you know, Mike Vrabel is probably the toughest coaching matchup Bill Belichick's faced all year, and he gave him a good run there, and you saw it. You saw it especially with the way that Mike Vrabel coached up his offense, which is, all right, we're going to take away Barmore. We're going to put minimum 3 guys on Barmore And we're gonna make sure that guy doesn't beat us. And we're gonna open up holes where we think we can in the run game. And they open up some massive holes.
Yeah.
And you know, I don't know if this is like even part of this conversation right now, but I don't even care that they didn't have Derrick Henry, because just replace Dontrell Hilliard and Deontay Foreman with Derrick Henry. Derrick Henry probably very well could have rushed 39 times for 270 yards and a touchdown in that game. The Titans are going to win now? Like, it was, I knew the key to that game was going to be taking away the passing game and you know, taking away Ryan Tannehill through the air. And I get that he didn't have A.J. Brown or Julio Jones. But even with those guys, I figured they were going to have a way to slow down. They were going to figure out how to slow down that passing game. And, you know, this is why another good stat, well, I guess stats are a theme so far, that the Bill Belichick is like 4-1 or 5-1 or something when allowing 200 plus rushing yards.
Yeah, 4-1.
It was a crazy
stat
like that. You know, when he allowed two 100 yard rushers. I forget the exact stat. I'm terrible with numbers like that. But, you know, I just thought it was a game where they could probably just let them run all you want. You're not going to beat us through the air, and we're going to score more than you, and that's going to be the end of it. And I think that's how it turned out, especially in the second half.
So I would say, in terms of the Derrick Henry thing, the one exception to that, like, I don't think you're entirely wrong. I don't think Derrick Henry completely flips that game like some Titans fans are suggesting, but he doesn't fumble on that carry at the beginning of the third quarter. And that really was the turning point. I mean, the Patriots took that play, took that momentum, and just ran away with the game from that point. Derrick Henry's a better player than that. So
that'll give you.
Yeah. So that to me is the difference, but I don't, you know, if they have an average running back, cause I think that game's still in the same way, but where are you at now with the run defense? Cause they get gashed like that. And is this a point of concern? It kind of, you know, they struggled last year, or is this just a one-off and Vrabel had a good game plan and sometimes you get beat and that's what it is?
I don't know if it was a one-off, but I think Vrabel put out a bit of a blueprint there. You know, like, if you just take away Barmore, you know, what do they have up front that can really disrupt things? You know, and Lawrence Guy had a couple plays, but, you know, he's not going to be a guy that takes over a game. And, yeah, I don't know if they really have the personnel to stuff any opponent, no matter who they got up there, for 60 minutes. And it was a good – they made so much progress with the run defense over – the course of that winning streak. And they're still in the winning streak, but you know, I think it was a good thing. It was a good thing almost. You can put a silver lining on it that, like, you know, now they know that they have areas that they can sew up, because, you know, they came in there with such a good game plan, and to say they got exposed is maybe a little strong, but I think it was about time to have a well-coached team tailor their game plan specifically to the Patriots personnel and attack them a specific way. And now guys like Carl Davis and Lawrence Guy, who I didn't think had great games, can go back and look at that and say, all right, what can we do to be better? And how can we adjust to this? And the coaches can look at it and say, how can we adjust our personnel and how we deploy them? And like, I don't know what Christian Barmore can do going back and looking at the film and seeing our friend of the program, Evan Lazar, tweeted a screenshot. It looked like he was getting quadruple teamed on one play. And, you know, I leaned over to you on a couple plays when I was watching with the binoculars that Christian Barmore had three guys on him a lot of the time. You know, like, he's the guy who he's the biggest disruptor on that defensive line. And so Vrabel obviously knew that. So he said, take that guy away. And like, Carl Davis and Lawrence Guy aren't going to beat us. So, you know, there's definitely things to work on. But, you know, maybe the big thing is working on, you know, scheming up open space for other guys when they take Barmore away. And so I don't think there's going to be gaping holes like that in the run defense in this game coming up against the Bills. I think that's going to be something that they sew up. But, you know, I look at it as a good thing that Vrabel was able to show them, is able to sort of poke holes in that run defense and show them areas where they can improve. And I think they will.
So the thing about Barmore to me, he actually played his fewest snaps since week 5 in terms of percentage. He was at 52%. He'd been over 63% the previous 5 games and then 57 mm-hmm. the game before that. So to me, that's why the Titans were able to run the ball so well. We've seen the Patriots pull away from teams, right? They pulled away from Atlanta. They pulled away from Cleveland early. Teams haven't been able to run the ball against the Patriots. They've been forced into being one dimensional, and then that pass rush can really get after it. And I think that's what you saw. They didn't, I don't know if they took away Christian Barmore so much as they made him irrelevant. You know, what is that elite pass rushing defensive tackle matter when you're running the ball? Because he's not a run, like he's not a primary run stopper. We've known this. They took Matt Judon out of the game because they were able to run the ball and keep the game competitive, right? They kept Barmore off the field because the Patriots, you can't put him out there on second and two because that's when they go to that big body package with Lawrence Guy, Dietrich Wise, and Carl Davis. I'm actually going to pull up Carl Davis's usage rate because I'm going to assume he played as much as he has in recent weeks. So it's you talk about the blueprint. To me, I wonder if the blueprint is just not letting the Patriots get ahead. Yeah, Carl Davis, 41% usage rate, his highest of the year. So that's it just kind of emphasizes the point that this Patriots team plays so differently when they get ahead early. And it gives the defense so many opportunities. So that's, you know, I'm not – They got to get it. It's basically they can defend the pass. And who would have thought we'd be saying that? You know, you lose Stephon Gilmore, you lose Jason McCourty, you lose Jonathan Jones for the season. Obviously, three losses under different circumstances, but those are three of your top four corners last year. They lose those guys are coming out here, and we want teams to throw on them. Basically, because that pass rush is so good, they make up for it. So that's what it was a case of to me. It's not that, I mean, the Titans did do some things differently in the way they ran the ball, and I'm sure other teams look at that. But a lot of it is just they were afforded the luxury of being able to run the ball. Cleveland down 28-7 off the jump, they can't run the ball. And then, you get to put Barmore out there. You get to put Judon out there, and you just let him loose. And then all of a sudden, the Patriots defense is playing to its strength. So that, you know, especially as we look ahead to Buffalo, that's the thing to me. It's, can you get an early lead, and can you force the other team to throw the ball?
Yeah, but can you plan on that? Like, exactly. Can you plan on, like, not them not getting a big lead? Like, I just looked at it as they see the personnel out there on the field, and then this is how we're going to attack them. And Carl Davis, to me, is a perfect example of that. They see Carl Davis out there, and it's like, well, we're going to run at him because we know we can turn him aside. And they turned him aside on a couple plays, especially those big runs, the big one by Dontrell Hilliard. And was it Foreman or Hilliard that had that big fumble at the beginning of the first second half that you
Foreman
mentioned.
So Hilliard had the touchdown run at the end of the first half. Foreman had the fumble.
Foreman had the fumble. Yeah, like on those plays, they saw that okay, they got this personnel out there. Let's part the Red Sea with these guys. You know, like that's exactly what they did, I think. And I know that Barmore wasn't out there very often, but when he was, they balled him up because they knew like if we let this guy beat us, we have no chance. And so I think it was just good use of personnel as far as using his own personnel and analyzing the way the Patriots are using their personnel and attacking them. And I think it was a really good chess match between Vrabel and Belichick up front there. And yeah, and so I don't know how you can plan on the Patriots not building a lead. And I don't know, what teams are going to have the defense to say that we're that confident that we could, you know, just prevent the Patriots from scoring and then we'll dictate the game our way. There's probably a handful of teams in the league that could do that. I guess most of them are in the NFC at this point,
right?
And other opponents like the Ravens aren't on their schedule, so we're not gonna really know until maybe they play each other in the playoffs. So, you know, that is a good big picture topic as far as like don't let them like who scores first, don't let the Patriots score early. But I just look at it schematically that I thought Vrabel, you know, really got into the details there and tailored his game plan specifically to what the Patriots wanted to do. And that was something that we hadn't seen with any of these other opponents and these so-called good head coaches that Belichick had been embarrassing in the previous five games of this winning streak. So I thought it was a good – the humbling is a little strong, but I think it was a good week for Bill Belichick to go back and assess what they're doing and look at what he can do better as well.
That's, you know, I've always felt those kind of games, that must be Bill Belichick's favorite game because he got the win. But at the same time, there's so many coachable moments and there's so much, you know, tape that comes out of that game that he can correct. So he gets to really dig in and have fun with it. So, and I'm sure he's done that this week. Offensive side of the ball. I mean, we got to start with, or let's start with Mac Jones. Let's actually start with Mac Jones. PFF, the clowns at PFF say it was his worst game of the year. He threw for over 300 yards, 2 touchdowns, no picks. He certainly missed a couple of throws, right? He missed the throw to Hunter Henry. He had one ball around that same time that should have been picked off. And then he spiked that screen to Kendrick Bourne. Those are kind of the three throws I marked that he missed. But man, if that's his worst game, if that's Mac Jones' worst game, and by the way, I talked about all the players the Titans were missing. They still had Jeffrey Simmons, who's one of the best defensive tackles in the league and a legit pass rushing threat. He had 5 sacks in the last 5 games coming into that one. And they have Kevin Byard, who's one of the best safeties in the league, regardless of how much he runs his mouth. By the way, side note, Kevin Byard talking shit during the week and then coming in Gillette and getting lit up. Where have I seen that before, right? The Leo pointing
game. Kevin Anthony Smith Byard. That's
exactly.
My name.
Exactly. It's happened. It's that thing where it's like, you know, I know 2 times isn't a lot, but it is kind of weird. It's happened twice.
That's another sign that the Patriots are back. We got opposing DBs talking crap and they're getting lit up.
Remember he wanted to cover Gronk or whatever it was a couple years ago, and then Gronk beat him in the anyway. That's a decent Titans defense. And again, over 300 yards, 2 touchdowns, no picks, 23 of 32. If that's his worst game, Patriots have a top 5 quarterback in the league.
Yeah, no, worst game of the year is ridiculous. I mean, he wasn't that good in the Chargers game, if I remember correctly.
I mean, he threw 3 picks against the Saints.
He threw 3. Yeah, the Saints game is his worst game of the year. Still. Worst game of the year is ridiculous, but this is another example where a stat can't tell the whole story. Yes, Mac Jones had a 123.2 passer rating. No, it was not a perfect game for him. You highlighted, I forget every single play you just highlighted, but he missed the touchdown to Hunter Henry. He almost threw an interception on a play where Johnny Smith was well covered. He threw that screen pass. I think you're talking about the screen pass that was almost a lateral.
Yeah.
It could have been backwards. That could have been a disaster. He had the play where he thought he had the first down, but he didn't.
He did say he thought that was a penalty is why he did the hands.
Okay. All right. Well, look, but he just wasn't totally, locked in the game. And like he was lucky to avoid big mistakes there. And that's where passer rating is. I like passer rating as like a big picture stat. It's tough to use for a single game because it's so intensive. It's so interception heavy, you know, like if he throws an interception on that play where he almost threw the interception to the linebacker covering Johnny Smith, his pass rating plummets, you know, like, so I think it was a decent game for him. He made some plays, obviously, and he was able to avoid the big mistake, but he narrowly avoided them. And this is where I know like PFF gets a lot of crap because a lot of what they do is subjective. But this is where I give him a little bit of credit, which is where they analyze the game from the standpoint of how well did he do his job? And they look at plays like that and they dock him for plays like that. Whereas a passer rating, it just goes in the books as an incompletion. All incompletions are created equal. So, but it wasn't his worst game of the year. No. I mean, that's ridiculous to throw over 300 yards, 70% completion and a couple touchdowns. I mean, he made some plays. He was good, but he also avoided some big mistakes. And, you know, like he plays a better team, better defense in the playoffs. He's got to be a little sharper than he was, I think.
But I would say ultimately, I think he did his job in that game because there were a lot of chances to turn the ball over. There were a lot of chances to get overly aggressive, to get impatient, to force throws, especially when the running game was getting stonewalled like it was. And he never took the bait. The turnover margin was that game, 4-0. That's the story of that game was the turnover margin. So I know he had the one near pick, but he didn't turn the ball over. He didn't turn the ball over. He really only had one turnover worthy throw. The throws he missed long, right? He wasn't underthrowing guys and getting picked off. He was just overthrowing and missing everything, which you always want to be on target. But if it's 1 of 2, throw a ball nobody can catch instead of a ball the defense can catch. So I thought, like, that's when I was pounding the table for Mac Jones before the draft, like, that's exactly what I had in mind is worst case scenario. He's going to come out. He's going to be able to make enough of the throws to keep things competitive. But more importantly, he's not going to give the ball away. He's not going to give the team extra chances. Now, he's been obviously above that. He's made some really impressive throws here, especially the last couple of weeks. But he's ultimately doing what I think they brought him in to do base level, which is manage the game, take care of the football. This was another really good example of that.
Yeah, no, he throws safe, catchable balls. And if it's, like you said, if it's off the mark, it's going to be safe. It's not going to be, he doesn't throw the ball into danger very often. I think back to a couple interceptions. He had 1 or 2 against the Saints. At least one of his interceptions was a terrible decision. There was a ball thrown well into traffic. And maybe that one against the Falcons a couple weeks ago was one that he would like to have back in terms of the, you know, not playing it safe. But no, that's been my favorite thing about him, really, is that he's throwing these catchable balls. He's throwing pillows, as Kendrick Bourne likes to call them, as the receivers like to call them. And, you know, even like if he's throwing an interception, it's not like you don't look back at many of his interceptions or turnovers and say, what the hell was he thinking? You know, like
right.
It's at least like a, you know, maybe a tight window throw or, you know, other circumstances like a deflection or whatever. But yeah, no, he plays it safe. And I think he's been managing games well. And I think, I mean, doing his job might even be selling him short in that game the other day. So, I mean, I thought he was fine. You know, like in my ups and downs column that I do after every game, I put him as neutral because, you know, I wanted to give him an up, but those near mistakes that we highlighted sort of, you know, knocked him down a couple pegs. But overall, he did his job in that game for sure.
Kendrick Bourne, the Patriots have a wide receiver one here. I mean, he's been one of the, it's hard to argue. He hasn't been one of the best receivers in the AFC, right? You just production wise. Yeah.
I think you said that last week. He's their number one receiver now. And yeah, no, he's been great. He's lining up all over the place, making big plays after the catch. He's been a true Patriots receiver, I think.
Yeah. And I mean, you look at kind of how he's developed after the catch, because that wasn't necessarily his game in San Francisco. And he's talked about this, that Bill Belichick, the Patriots coaching staff, they've really changed him as a player. Like, they've taught him a lot and they've revolutionized his game. And when they signed him, you know, I thought he's a good player. I was worried he was going to be a little redundant to Jacoby Myers. And that hasn't been the case because they found other ways to use him. And I mean, now it's the point where he's doing a little bit of everything, contested catches in the end zone, run after the catch. Like, those are his two touchdowns are two completely different skill sets. You don't necessarily see receivers make both of those plays in the same game, right? Those are two completely different assignments you're asking him to do. One's closer to a tight end, the other's closer to a running back. So I, you know, his development, and we'll get to kind of the bigger picture take I have for this in a second, but a big reason the offense, obviously Mac Jones, a big part of it too, but a big reason the offense has kind of hit this level, their top 10 offense in football right now, has been the emergence of Kendrick Bourne and what he's been able to do.
Yeah, I mean, I came into the season saying Jonnu Smith was going to be their biggest target or most productive target, however you want to qualify it. But I thought it was going to be for the reasons that he was going to do the things that Kendrick Bourne is doing, which is line up at different parts of the field and make plays in different ways. You know, he made that big, deep 75-yard touchdown against the Cowboys, and he had that touchdown against the Titans where he caught a short intermediate type of pass over the middle and then made a huge play after the catch and kept his feet in bounds, which was impressive. And he caught that corner fade in the end zone. Like, he's really doing it all. He's settled in as, I don't know if this is accurate, but correct me if I'm wrong, but he's really settled in as the Z receiver on this team. You got Myers in the slot. You got Aguilar lining up as the X, true outside guy. And then you got Bourne as the Z who can do a bunch of different things for them. And so, yeah, he's emerged as the top guy in terms of, we're going to move him all around the field. He's going to be the chess piece and he's going to be our big play threat. And he can make plays in the short to intermediate areas. And I would like to see him combined with Hunter Henry in the red zone, maybe see both of that in one game. So I don't know if we've actually seen the full potential of the offense, but Bourne's emergence has been exciting, I think, for Patriots fans.
And I mean, we almost saw it, right? Like a couple inches away from Hunter Henry having a touchdown in that game.
Right.
But yeah. So, here's kind of to move on from the game, unless do you have any other massive points about that game I missed or Nick Foles?
No,
very
no,
good.
My main point was how Vrabel coached him up, especially in the trenches. And I thought that was basically my main point. So we can move on.
Well, I will also add Nick Folk is very good. But
he's
that can also kind of lead.
He's
in
unbelievable,
this
so, by the way,
he's
that guy
really
was
good.
Out of the league for a year. He had a bad injury. I forget exactly what it was, but
I think it was a hip.
Yeah, bad hip injury. He still still acts up from time to time with him. But the fact that he's not only come back in the league, but he's been one of the best kickers in the league.
He's the best this year, he's been the best kicker in football.
He's in the all pro conversation, I think, isn't he?
He should be. He
it's
absolutely
be hard
be.
To beat Justin Tucker, I think, probably. But
so let's lay this out then. Bill drafts the rookie of the year on offense. High impact rookie on defense, arguably the technically best rookie. I know Micah Parsons is bigger numbers. Defensive free agent signing of the year in Matt Judon. I don't know that Kendrick Bourne's going to win any award, but he's been excellent. Hunter Henry's obviously been excellent. Jalen Mills has kind of quietly filled a role. Brings back Nick Folk, who might be an all pro. I know everybody wants to talk about Bill winning coach of the year, and I'm not saying he shouldn't. He should right now. I don't know that he will, because we know how the award voters hate Patriots, but obviously Bill should be head coach of the year. What about executive of the year? And let me preface this by saying, I don't know that Bill technically can or can win the award. Like, I'm not sure how that works, because he's not an executive officially. He's the de facto GM. I went back and I looked it up. The only times Patriots have won it, Scott Pioli won it in 03 and 04. So, like, I don't know how that works, but make it work. Bill Belichick's been the executive of the year. Like, I show me a team that added and had the impact the way Belichick added and impacted his roster this year, because there isn't one.
Right. Yeah. I wonder what the criteria is. I wonder if you have to be like a GM or a president of football operations in title. So I wonder, like, would Dave Ziegler be their candidate for executive of the year? Like, would they have to submit his
because Patricia,
he's the director of player personnel? Oh my God.
It might be Matt Patricia.
Come on. If Matt Patricia wins anything, that's a bad sign.
Well, remember his name was on the Cam contract? We were all talking about that.
Yeah, put his signature on anything, right?
Right.
Bill's got to win something. I mean, the way he's turned this thing around, like, practically overnight, with the combination of free agent signings and drafting a quarterback in the first round. I mean, that's the simplest route to take, and that's like the cliche route to take for a rebuilding team. And it doesn't always work out because they don't always have the coach to back it up. But the fact that he made all those moves, and, you know, he's really reestablished himself as the premier coach in the league with the premier staff. And, you know, like, I think he has to win coach of the year. Like, I think that they're going to give him something. He's going to win something at the end of the year. And it's going to be sort of like a combination, like, you know, a lifetime achievement isn't the right way to describe it, but like credit for the whole thing, because I don't know if, like you said, he's just the head coach in title.
Well, isn't, well, I don't know, wouldn't, if you could give that a
head
be,
coach GM? Hmm?
Wouldn't that be executive of the year? I mean,
yeah,
so
that's true. Is head coach an executive? I don't know.
It's not. But so here's the thing. Like, look, first off, it's not an AP award. It's a sporting news award. Most of these awards are AP awards, like MVP, Rookie of the Year, etc. Blah blah blah. Sporting News gives them out. The Pro Football Writer Association gives them out. But the AP is the big one. There is no AP executive news of the year. That comes from Sporting News. I don't know how official this is. Like, so for instance, they just didn't give it to anybody in 2013. They're just like, no, we're not gonna give it out this year.
No, nah, they all suck.
So if you can choose to not give it out, I think you can give it to a de facto GM. I think you can do that. I think that's fair.
Like that guy that submitted a blank ballot for the Baseball Hall.
Oh, get the hell out of here with anyone. This is a football podcast, so let's not go. But Steve, whatever your name is, thank you for your service and keeping the Hall of Fame pure. And preventing baseball players from entering the Baseball Hall of Fame. Who wants to see their favorite players inducted in the Hall of Fame when it can be a pure and honorable museum the way the voting process intended? All glory to the writers. Anyway.
Go off, King. It's like, yeah, it literally is performance art. It's like a guy putting up a blank canvas and they're like, brilliant.
But so yeah, I don't. And they were talking about this morning on Zolak and Bertrand, because I tweeted yesterday. They're talking about, well, which one's he more deserving of, coach or executive? And they were split. Beatle said coach, Zoe said executive. I don't know if they planned that or not, but this award seems super unofficial. It seems kind of laid back. And doesn't it just feel, let me put it this way. Ryan Grigson won it once. Ryan Grigson was named the NFL Executive of the Year. I don't know that we can live on a planet where Grigson has that award on his resume and Bill Belichick doesn't. And what better year to give it to him than right now?
See, I think he's more deserving of executive of the year, because I'm not surprised that he's taking this collection of talent and coaching them up and coaching them.
That's
up.
What
that
Zoe
doesn't
said.
Surprise me, really.
Yeah.
The coach of the year usually goes to the most surprising team. So like Cliff Kingsbury, I guess.
He'd be the only other one. If they keep winning without Kyler, there is an argument to be made there.
It's between him and Dan Campbell, I think, for coach of the year in the NFL.
Biting kneecaps, of course. look, maybe they'll give it to Cliff to stop him from going to Oklahoma, but that's a whole other can of worms. I would love to see Bill win executive of the year this year. I think he's earned it. Not to say he hasn't earned coach. Why not both, right? Why not both? And as far as I can tell, and again, this award's super unofficial, so it's hard to really tell, but the only person who's won coach and executive is Paul Brown. So you know Bill wants to add his name to that list. Give me a quick thought on the Bills here before we wrap it up.
Well, this is, again, we keep saying like every week, this is their biggest test of the year, biggest test of the year. This is their biggest test of the year because they're on the road. It's going to be a hostile environment. There's going to be people, you know, pooping in corners and going through flaming tables and drinking out of beer bongs, and Bills and the Patriots are going to have to drive through all that. And then they're going to have to go into that crowd and that stadium and dodge sex toys flying onto the field. And it's going to be tough to really focus and execute for 60 minutes. But I think it's probably a good thing for the Patriots that the Bills are coming off that big dominant win over the Saints, because if that went the other way, then you'd have a team that's motivated to come out and win after coming off a tough loss. But maybe it's a little different for them. I'm really interested to see what they can do against Josh Allen. I want to see if they can confuse him, if they can mix up the coverages like they've done. And I wonder if they're going to keep doing what they've done with the zone defenses and see if Josh Allen can pick that apart. A huge game for J.C. Jackson, because we remember last year he got absolutely smoked by Stephon Diggs. So I think J.C. is going to be motivated to play really well in that game.
This and, might
hopefully
be
J.C. doesn't say anything crazy in the media this week if he talks. But that's going to be a big redemption week for him, or at least an opportunity at redemption for him. So that's going to be the keys, I think, is slowing down, take Stephon Diggs out and mix up your coverages and see if Josh Allen can overcome that. I think that's going to be the biggest key of the game.
I mean, how many millions of dollars can J.C. Jackson make himself this week? Right? Because this is kind of the last box he has to cross to kind of prove he's in that reset the market cornerback sphere. So
signature game.
I think you got to get up. Obviously, we talked about that before. Get up early. I think, you know, Josh Allen's really struggled against zone this year, so it's a good time to be playing zone right now if you're the Patriots. I think J.C. Jackson plays on Stephon Diggs' side, but, you know, zone defense, try to get Josh Allen to throw you one. Stop the run, make them one-dimensional on defense, and then don't turn the ball over on offense. And I think Josh Allen will throw, like, even against the Saints, he didn't look great. They won that game pretty handily, but he threw a couple picks. Two of his touchdowns, one's a screen, the other one, Marshawn Lattimore, just fell over at the 15-yard line. So I think if they, like, I know it sounds weird because he almost won an MVP last year. Stop the run, put the ball in Josh Allen's hands, make him beat you against zone, and I think they'll be okay. I think that they'll keep it close, and then you see what happens, and you need some plays on
correct
offense.
Correct me if I'm wrong. The Bills, are they having trouble stopping the run this year? Because I guess that'll be interesting to see if they have trouble stopping the Patriots on the ground. That's
so
what I'm going to be looking for.
They got gashed by Jonathan Taylor in that Colts game, but they were missing their middle linebacker, Tremaine Edmonds, who's a really good player. So
decent loss.
Right. So they haven't been amazing against the run, but I mean, they lost their best run defender against one of the best rushing teams in football. Like, that's what's going to happen. But I think it is a big week, especially it's going to be cold. It might snow. A big week for the Patriots to run the football, but we'll get more into that game on Thursday on the preview podcast. For more coverage, 98.5 The Sports Hub, 98.5thesportshub.com. For Matt Dolliff, I'm Alex Barth. Thanks for listening.